You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and this episode serves as an auditory permission slip for you to go do more of what brings you joy. Signed, Talia Pollock. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. You know what? Socks. Not wearing compression socks. Yeah, absolutely. I used to think compression socks were those knee-high stockings my grandma wore with her flat tan Velcro strap sneakers. But that was before I learned about Comrade's incredibly fun-looking compression socks. Not to judge them too hard, but the peeps at Comrade legit spent 2 years developing these adorable, non-ugly, knee-high socks that provide all-day comfort and deliver certified health benefits. I'm sure you've heard that wearing compression socks on airplanes helps keep your blood circulating to combat jet lag, fatigue, and even reduce serious health risks like blood clots. But did you know that wearing compression socks makes walking Tommy or your pup, cooking in the kitchen, hopefully recipes from partyinmyplants.com or from my upcoming book, Party in Your Plants, out in April 2020, or sitting doing endless emails, all much more comfortable experiences? Comrade socks are proven, by myself also, as well as studies, to energize our legs, reduce swelling, and increase circulation, all things that truly have been lessening the frequency that I have to go get cheap foot massages for my incredibly consistently sore feet. Do I feel kind of dorky promoting compression socks? Yes. Do I swear that you can trust me that these socks are worth me feeling dorky right now? Also, yes. And do I have a special offer for how you can get Comrade's rad compression socks for 20% less than non-Party in My Plants podcast listening humans? Hell yes. Go to comradesocks.com/party to see how fun their socks really are, and then to try ordering one pair or a little bundle for 20% off. That's comradesocks.com, comradesocks.com/party, and use discount code PARTY at checkout. And then have a party in your incredibly comfortable and nourished feet. This is Shannon Kaiser's third visit to my podcast, and for good reason. She's my life/business coach, and I keep getting free sessions out of interviewing her. Oh, I'm joshing. Shannon's 3P is because she's my go-to source for sage life advice without bells and whistles or woo-woo confusion, and because she keeps writing wonderful books worth talking about. In this episode, Shannon and I chat about achieving inner peace and living joyfully in a true way, not just in a way that satisfies your ego or makes those around you think you're the bee's knees. When you scrap all the external factors and you ditch the shoulds and have an honest heart to freaking heart with yourself, you're left with a clear path towards what will actually fulfill you. And then Shannon urges us to go do that thing. Now, food isn't really a topic of discussion, this one, but since I believe the whole point of partying with plants in the first place is to have the energy to live more joyfully, think about this as like the masterclass in living epically once your planty diet gives you the energy, stamina, confidence, and mental clarity to do so. Welcome, Shannon, to the Party in My Plants podcast for the third time.
It's so great to be here. I'm so excited to be here with you today.
Where are you calling in from? Last time or either the first time you were in Seoul, Korea?
Yeah. I forget where I was last time.
Where are you now?
Oregon. I'm in Portland, Oregon, my home base, if you will.
Home base. So, okay, great. Yeah. Good. We're grounded there. And we're talking about joy today. Lots and lots and lots about joy. But on the topic of purpose, which is what I opened your beautiful book to and read that line about how when we're not living in line with our purpose, we're anxious. I have a question. Like, you talk a lot about doing stuff that we were made for and then living in alignment with what we were made to do. And it kind of got me thinking, like, it's like a tea kettle. Like, a tea kettle was made to produce hot water, or a kitchen table was made to be eaten off of. So do you think that we are the same? Like, were we made to be XYZ or do ABC?
I feel like the made for is equal to authentic living. So we are all made to be our true self and to be in alignment with our soul or with our heart. So when I say live the life you were made for, because if you think about it, think about you in your own business and where you are today from where you were 5 years ago or even 10 years ago, we are always changing. And so to define ourselves by what we do or what we produce or the value we put out into the world or how many people we're helping, that is missing the point. That's not what we're made for. We're made to be our true self. And in that, it's about expressing yourself.
Boom. So it's not like someone's made to be a doctor, or you're made to be a computer programmer, or you're made, you're trying to say that we're made to just be ourselves, however our free will and our gut instincts want that to manifest.
Well, in your point, maybe the doctor loves being a doctor. I love writing so much. It's my joy. And so really what it's about is joy, coming in with the joy, because that's what joy seeking is. It's about allowing yourself to give yourself permission to do what brings you the most joy, not putting expectations or parameters around it, just doing it because it feels so joyful. And that might look like you are the best doctor or the best dancer or the best writer or whatever. But as long as you're honoring what feels good, then that's really what it's about.
So you've written, what, 5 books on the psychology of happiness and fulfillment? This is number 6?
This is number 5.
This is number 5. But there's probably already a 6 and probably 7, 8, 9 in a pipeline somewhere, right?
Yeah, you kind of know me. Yeah, you know me behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I'm already working on those.
Yeah,
but let's
course.
Talk, you know, it's so funny how that works. But that's because it's my joy. My number one joy is writing and just sharing with the message of what I learn as I share it. And so I actually, joy seeker, people think, oh, you have this book, it's joy. It means joy all the time. And you're teaching people how to be joyful. And I'm like, actually, it's not that at all. It's really, this whole book started on the saddest day of my life, which was when my dog, Tucker, I used to have a rescue dog, he died. And I found myself in this deep depression. And here I was, I had written 4 books. I was a best-selling author and a life coach. And I was like, how could I fall back? And that's when I went on the deepest inner journey, which truly is what authentic living is. I was looking outside of myself for happiness still. And Tucker represented my joy. He pulled me out of depression. I found self-love and my purpose with him by my side. When he died, I lost a piece of me. And I realized that I had still, at that point in my life, this was 2 years ago, was looking outside of myself to feel good and to feel joy. And when that thing left, that thing I loved more than life itself, I had a wake-up call that I had to find it within myself. And that truly is the only fulfillment for us. Like, we're chasing happiness outside of ourselves. But it's an inner peace journey is really what it is.
So how did you begin this journey? I mean, so you'd written 4 books at that point and you were like, oh, I got fulfillment and I got authenticity. I'm locked down. And then when you lost Tucker, you realized maybe not so much.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I think that's what it is. We're always growing if we allow ourselves to grow more into who we really are. And I was just peeling back a new next layer. I actually went into a place where I fell into my depression, but it didn't last nearly as long. All through my 20s, the doctor diagnosed me with depression. This was a very different depression. Mm-hmm. This was more like, who are you really and what do you want to be in this world? And is what you're doing, and these are questions we should all ask ourselves, mm-hmm. right, to feel more fulfillment. What are you doing and is what you're doing really supporting that life? And I started to do more research and I read a study. You may have heard of it. It's the top regrets of the dying. Mm-hmm. The number one regret, right? Say that. The number one regret is, I wish I would have lived a life true to myself, not the one others expected of me. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. When I read that, I was like, not just me, but that means all of us. So many of us are living for other people. We're making choices based on what we think we should do, what our partners want for us, what our family wants for us. And we're living by society expectations. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're walking around anxious, depressed, and feeling like something's off.
Yeah.
So I said, get that. I am going inward. And I asked myself the question that changed everything and pulled me out of my depression and healed my grief.
What's the question?
Which is,
Oh, okay. No, I'm ready? Like, what? Yeah.
Okay. I love you so much. The question is, what have I always wanted to do that I have not given myself permission to do? That's the key. And my inner voice said, travel the world for full time. Like, you've been wanting to do that for decades. And I was a coach and a writer. I could work from anywhere. And that's what I did. I set out to travel full time for a full year. And I didn't even know it would turn into a book, but that's what the Joy Seeker really was and became.
So you asked yourself, what have I always wanted to do that I've not given myself permission to do?
Exactly. And I think we should all ask ourselves, because we are saying a lot of the times we're doing things that we think we should do, or that other people in our industry are doing and it's working for them, or we're doing what we think we want based on an older version of ourselves. But here I was. After Tucker passed, I was in a new place in my life. And so we have to keep checking in with ourselves and keep asking. And that's what happened for me. I had to say, okay, let's regroup, realign. What do I really want? Right. Give myself permission to be who I really am and what I really want.
Permission is such an important word. I just like quadruple underlined it and starred it and like bubbled it and everything right now as you were saying that, because I've been, you know, trying to work on giving myself permission. This is my answer to your question, to just be happy. Like, my thing is not travel the world or do this. It's not even an action, really. It's just like, I feel that I have not given myself permission to just be like happy. Just be like, you know what? Life is fucking good. I'ma enjoy it. You know, I feel that I'm not giving myself permission to just revel in what I've built for my life. That I'm like, oh, it's you can't just be happy. Like, that's not fair. What are you supposed to just be fulfilled and happy and satisfied? Like, that's no. But I've been working a lot lately on giving myself permission to just be happy and like calm.
Yes.
Why does that take permission? That's absurd, but it's true.
And you're so right, though. It's not always, and that's really what happened, is I was looking at the dream. I had a big dream of traveling, and I thought that's what it was, but it's not what that is at all. It's what it represented. And to me, it represented a joyful life. And so for you talking about happiness, it's the same thing. So you may think that next book deal or the next 100,000 followers or whatever it is, that next TV gig.
How about the first 100,000 followers?
Right. We think that those are the things, the new house, the babies, all that. And then we get there and we feel like something is off. And it's not because that thing really isn't, it's the thing under that thing. Like you said, why can't I just allow myself to be happy no matter what is going on outside of myself, no matter what dream is being achieved? And that is the true purpose to all of it. Like, that's really why I think we're here, to enjoy the journey.
Totally. So how then do you define joy? I mean, joy is like, this is all about joy. You are like the joy gal now. So what is your definition of joy?
Joy is our essence. I truly believe that joy is one of the most good feeling things we can have in our life, but to live a joyful life doesn't mean you're in joy all the time. Yeah. And that's really the trick and the beautiful part of all of it. So again, as an example, I was traveling and I would go to these places and I'd have such high expectations on them. Mm-hmm. And then I would feel kind of let down, like, oh, okay, that's not cool as I thought. And there were some types like, yeah, okay, sounds great. You're traveling the world. That's a big dream. So it seems kind of undoable for a lot of people. And, you know, sometimes we think, how could I be upset in something that is so glamorous or so amazing? But most of my joy-seeking journey of traveling the world, I was actually a hot mess. I was uncomfortable. I was sweaty. I was trying to figure out the language. I was like, you know what I mean? Like, you're trying to figure out how to function in a country that doesn't speak your language. So it was growth. But here's what I got to the point of. It was magnificent. There were parts that were so awe-inspiring that took my breath away. And it's not even because of what I was looking at. It's because of what I was experiencing on the inside. I had allowed myself to be in the moment, to be in the joy and revel in all of life. And that was the true magnificent outcome, really.
So how did you start to, you know, get your happiness from inner joy versus like being in Marrakesh and enjoying traveling or being on a beach somewhere? Like, how did you decipher that it wasn't like the outside experience of being in these cool places? It was like inner happiness. And have you been able, since you've gotten home, to keep that joy going?
Yes. So that is 100% the greatest gift that in writing the book and sharing the book and living it has taught me, is that joy is not outside of ourselves. And that's what you kind of learn in the journey of the book. But for me, it actually, I got to these places and I was like let down, as I said. And I said, wait a second, this is no different than I was back home. I'd be chasing the next book deal or chasing the next accolade or looking for that thing outside of myself. It's no different, even though I'm living a dream. Something's got to change. And if here you are living the biggest dream in your heart of hearts, you're giving yourself permission to do it, but it feels the same as all those other dreams. So that really was the realization that I had to go inward. And how I went inward was making the choice. I said, you know what? I'm going to choose. And that's really where it starts. We have to choose to be present for what is instead of chasing what we want next.
So if someone's listening and they're like, okay, go inward. What the heck does that mean? Like really, like what if someone wants to go inward right now? What? How do they know if they're not inward and if they should go inward?
Well, a good way to look at it is if we're chasing, if we're going after all the things, signing up for all the courses, enrolling in all the programs, going to all the seminars and reading all the books, but nothing's really changed. That's a good sign that we're actually, one, I call it the lusty learner. You're kind of in the personal development space, or you're reading all the books and you're like, okay, this is great, but we're not applying it to our life. I truly feel going inward is about really taking the steps. It's an inner journey. And what it is it's about getting to know who you are, like getting to know who you are on a personal level, and then becoming comfortable with who you are, which is really about self-love. But most importantly, being unapologetic. One of the biggest fears people have is being fears of judged, not fitting in. Mm-hmm. We're worried about public ridicule or anything like that sort. But this gives you the freedom to say, you know what other people think of me has no bearing on who I am. I love me and I'm going to live for me. That's what going inward is. It's about being who you are and unapologetic about it.
I mean, you make it sound so easy. Like it's just like drink, you know, some more water in the morning. Like just go inward, love yourself where you are. Don't give a shit what other people think. But yeah, how, you know, if someone's like, I mean,
I think the very first thing we can do is actually the fact that we're having the conversation shows that it's an important thing for us, right? So listening, if you're listening and you're like, I want to go inward, journaling is a great way, like journal questions, get out a journal, do automatic writing, just write in the morning on questions. Another thing is to just allow yourself to be. So often we overfill our calendar with stuff. Mm. We don't know how to just sit. We relate to being, you know, stressed out, and that's kind of where the anxiety comes in. We are so focused on doing, and going inward requires that we let go of that doing because we're scared of what we will find sometimes. There's pain from the past we don't want to look at. There's emotions that we're carrying around that we're scared of. But the truth is, it is the most beautiful journey you can go on because that is the only way that true transformation can happen. And it's kind of like if I were to say to you, let's, you know, go in a hot tub. And we're like, yeah, let's go in a hot tub. And we're all like, yeah, these hot tubs are fun. Okay, let's go over to this country and go in this hot tub and let's go here. And then this process is really about, well, wait a second, why don't we build our own hot tub so we never have to like work? And people are like, I don't want to build it. Are you kidding me? But you're spending so much time and money going outside chasing the next thing. Let's do the inner work and really show up.
Now I just want to go in a hot tub.
I know. Let's do it. Let's build it. I'll build it.
We have to build our own hot tubs. What are some warning signs that one is out of alignment with their true self? Because like in my life, I'm an above averagely, you know, in comparison to those I surround myself with, I'm an above averagely, extremely above averagely, like introspective, inner working kind of gal. Like if I'm out of alignment, like with an outfit, I'm like, oh, I can't wear this. It's out of alignment. Or like, you know, like I am just like very attuned to if something is, you know, authentic or not. But I think those around me aren't, at least my inner circle are not that way. So how would somebody who doesn't go around the world as, you know, inner focused as I am actually realize like, wait, I'm out of alignment. Like I'm totally not living, you know, aligned with my authenticity.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we can first ask, does it feel good? Does it feel good? Does it feel joyful? And usually when we're in alignment, it's something that feels good, but it's not from a place of running away from. You know, like in my 20s, I would do a lot of drugs and have a lot of sex, and it felt good in the moment, but I was running away from myself because I hated myself. And so that's very different than now. I'm very aware by connecting to myself and does this make me feel good? But also a big way that we can tell totally is if we're comparing ourselves to others, we know we're out of alignment. If we're judging others or judging ourselves, we know we're out of alignment. So one of the very first things we can do is just look at where we're comparing ourselves. And a lot of times it's because what we're comparing ourselves to, that person or that relationship or that situation, has what we wish we wanted for ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, as Glendon Doyle, she says, you know, comparing and judging is really just shining a spotlight, a huge flashing spotlight on what you want and what you want within yourself.
Totally.
So what we can do, I did this in my career starting, like the first few years, I would compare myself to my mentors and my author friends, and I'd be insanely jealous when they got picked up on Oprah or whatever it was that I was working towards. And it would take me out of my alignment. And so I switched it to then kind of say, well, wait a second, they're on their own journey. And so first recognize that everyone's on their own path. They're showing me what's possible, mm-hmm. but then come back to yourself and say, well, what do I want? And really the how is in the now. So taking steps right now to work towards what you want is the fastest way to get in alignment, because you're taking action towards guided action towards what you want. So those are some starters if we feel out of alignment.
What about people that settle? You know, I feel like settling is a really interesting topic. And you're big on saying, you know, to get unstuck, it's helpful to ask ourselves, where am I settling? Or what skills or talents am I not using? Or what have I been avoiding out of fear? So what if somebody's just like a settler? I mean, are there some people you think that are just like comfy in their little comfort zone and that's okay? And then there's some people like that are super ambitious and want to take on the world? Or do you think that settling is never okay? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
It's so good. I talk about it in my book, Joy Seeker. Actually, there's like three stages to actualizing your dreams. And I think everyone goes through them at different phases. And so first, again, recognizing that every single person's on their own journey. And some people are super comfortable with what looks like settling to someone else. It's actually something that could be not settling for them, right? So who are we to kind of say, oh, they're settling because they're not going for whatever. But on top of that, it's also interesting because a lot of times we are settling a lot of times, whether yeah. it's you're in a body that you don't feel comfortable in, you're in a relationship that you're not admitting doesn't serve you, or a job.
Job, yeah.
And we settle because we are comfortable, because it's predictable mm-hmm. and we know it. We know it's happening, and like we can predict and manage it. Our biggest fear usually when we're settling is fear of the unknown. And so we get comfortable. The way through this is to say and really recognize, okay, well, do I want more for myself in my life? And you will get to a place, as I take people through the stages of kind of actualizing your dreams, there's the no-goers, which are the people who are settling. And it's fine, because we all have points in our life where we have to be there in order to get the courage to move into the next phase, which is really where you start to dream about possibilities. Well, what if I did go to this new career, or, you know, got married or left the career, this relationship, whatever it is, you start to dream about it in your mind. And then we get to a place almost always where we can no longer stay in the situation because it hurts us physically, emotionally, spiritually. We have to go for what we want. And so that's when we start the businesses, open the blogs, write the book, leave the relationship, travel the world. And that's really the fulfillment in action plan. There's nothing wrong with settling if it's serving you. But if you're feeling like you're staying stuck because you're afraid of the unknown, that's when you want to take some guided action to move forward.
I see. So if you're like just happily settled, you know, like in your life just feels like a really great pair of like worn in sweatpants
totally.
And you're just like, you know what? I am comfortable, whatevs. Like you're saying, all the power to you, no problem. But you're saying if you're settling, but consciously know you're settling out of fear for the unknown or for change or for having to do a lot of shit to get to a different place, that's no bueno.
Totally. Exactly. Excellente. That's what I really feel like.
Got it.
We could try to do the whole thing in Spanish. No, but I think there's a balance, because if we think about your own life, right, we can think about a time where you didn't think you were settling, and then you got to a place where it no longer felt the way it used to, and it was settling. So it's almost like the evolution of yourself. We're always growing, and we have to just let ourselves grow into the next thing, because a lot of times, everything has an expiration date, everything. And if we're holding on past the expiration date, that's when you know it's time to let go so you can grow.
Ooh, Oof, I'm in that right now. I mean, I'm about to make this big move. And with that is everything is coming to a head here. You know, I first realized like I am not happy in my living situation. And that was a huge and scary thing. And I think I was settling. Like I was rationalizing, oh, we have like a cool apartment. Like, oh, it's a great location. Oh, people like it. You know, totally. And I outgrew it. We both did. Yeah. And so I totally see what you're saying there.
And that's a really good point. And I talk about that too in the Joy Seeker.
You talk about me moving in your book?
No, that would be amazing if I did.
You talk about my cellulite in a different book. Thank you very much.
I love you so much. It's not you. It's not you. You're protected.
It was an anonymous client. That was me in the self-love experiment.
It's all about self-love and you found self-love. Tali, you're just going to be in all my books. I hope you don't mind.
Great.
So what I share though is that's how you know when you have stopped growing, and that is all you have to do. No matter what it is, whatever the situation is, if you know you are settling, if you realize I've stopped growing, and that's when you got to go and say, you know what? You said it best. You're getting ready to move because you are growing.
Did I just say that?
Yeah, you did just now. It was beautiful.
I think it was an out-of-body experience. Well, how do you know if you, I mean, now this is a question to ask myself, how does one know if they've stopped growing? I don't know. You just get uncomfortable, right?
That's exactly. Yeah. And it's, you even nailed it. You said, you know, I'm looking around. I have
need
a
to
place
rewind
that's,
this.
That's, yeah. and you're like, people like where I live. It's in a great location. So our ego comes in. It's like, why would you want to change everything? And that's another thing. I call it a joy buster. It's like a thing that blocks us from our joy, which is the fear and the ego that tries to tell you, no, things are good.
Like rationalizing.
And what's really happening, totally, it's over rationalizing everything. It's analyzing it and saying, who are you to think you can, you know, make a change for no reason. But our true self, our authentic self, our future self, if you will, the happy self, fulfilled self, is guiding us to what it knows. You know, the universe is working with us to be a little woo-woo here. It's guiding us to what we know is going to be for our highest good. A lot of times we're holding on to an old version of ourselves because we don't know what's coming around. We don't know how we're going to grow. But when we do take that step forward, we grow and it's beautiful.
It's scary. It's really scary and so uncomfortable, but it's otherwise staying small and staying in those sweatpants when, you know, you're really, they're ripped. They are not comfy anymore. Like you gotta grow, move on. So you call that a joy buster. What are other joy busters that you have in your book and in your mind?
Yeah. So a joy buster. I also think another one, we talked about comparison. That's a big one. Another one is actually idolizing others or putting others on pedestals. We don't even think we're doing it, whether it's a mentor, coach, a famous person, another person who's in the space of wellness, and you're like, oh, they're so great. Whenever we do this, we do it with our relationships too. Mm-hmm. When we put our power outside of ourselves, or we're looking outside of, they are so amazing, it makes us feel less than, it makes us feel like we're not good enough. And so really, it's also an ego trick that's trying to tell you you're never going to be as good as them. And then it's kind of tied to comparison. It keeps you playing hooked into the small mind. So what we can do is really take your power back. Also look at joy. As far as joy goes, there's a lot of negativity, fear, pain, separation, hate out in the world. If we're looking out in the world all the time, then we're taking that in and internalizing it. What we can do, same idea, is disengage with it and allow yourself to focus on the good that's happening. Be the good and support the good.
This episode is enthusiastically sponsored by a product that couldn't possibly float my boat more, Four Sigmatic. My boat is so floated by Four Sigmatic's mushroom drinks that any more floating would turn my boat into an airplane because it's flying. Okay, so the first time I tried a packet of Four Sigmatic mushroom tea and a glass of hot water, I was muy skeptical because of this whole mushroom thing being really trendy right now, and I'm always reluctant to hop on trend trains. Wow, we're really covering all the modes of transportation here. But I drank those shrooms, and I felt truly awesome. It's hard to explain. I just felt way more awesome than I felt before I drank it. Since then, I consistently consume at least one type of shrooms a day, and it helps me know it's going to be bright, 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 sunshiny day, even when it's rainy and gray, because I am telling you, these mushrooms are magic. Although they don't make me hallucinate in a bathtub like my ex-boyfriend's famous magic mushroom experience, which in hindsight, he seemed way too proud of. But nobody's hallucinating the magical effects of these shrooms, okay? They are ultra scientifically proven to boost immunity and gut health. Yes, please, and thank you. And the four different shrooms that Four Sigmatic uses most, hence the four in Four Sigmatic, wink, wink, they all do different epic things for your bod. Reishi helps you relax. Cordyceps give you a non-caffeinated energy for sports and stuff. Lion's mane, which does not come from a lion's mane, boosts your brain. And chaga is a mega charge for your immune system. I weave all four of those separate mushrooms into my life by way of the teas. That's what I'm talking about here, people, are mushroom teas that you dissolve in a packet of hot water and haya. But I also fancy myself some of their fancier shroom concoctions. They have this relaxing, thanks to the Reishi hot cocoa that I pretty much make every night with almond milk. They have matcha powder, which is the only matcha I now use. They have these magic mushroom chai latte packets that you can add to water or almond milk for a hot or iced, sweetest sippable treat. And I have to say, even though I don't drink coffee, Four Sigmatic is kind of famous for their multiple kinds of organic, much better for you coffee, even mocha mixes. So you can mocha chocolate. Okay, enough from me. I'm sorry. I just finished a mushroom matcha latte and I'm flying high. But because you listen to this podcast, thanks so much for doing that, by the way. You can save 15% off any and all Four Sigmatic shroomy stuff you'll want to buy off of their site, foursigmatic.com, using code PARTYINMYPLANTS. Or you can just go to foursigmatic, foursigmatic.com/PARTYINMYPLANTS to automatically save that 15%, baby. Oh, by the way, did I mention that I don't even really like eating mushrooms? Yeah, but now, thanks to Four Sigmatic, my body doesn't need to have shroom FOMO. Okay, again, hit up foursigmatic.com/partyinmyplants to save 15% on this mega boat floating stuff that I always find stuffed into my pockets, purses, luggage, or my bra because I just can't get enough. So a lot of this comes back to just not looking outside you. I mean, that's what you keep saying is the common theme here. Go inward, stop doing anything outside of you. I feel like in this day and age where all we do, not all we do, but a lot of what we do is scroll on Instagram and look outside of us. Like, what are some like practices to shut this down? What were you going to say?
And it's so true. Yeah. And that, yeah, that's exactly it. You nailed it, because we're living in a time where we're all consumed with looking outside of ourselves. And look what we have, the highest depression rates, the highest suicide rates, more anxiety than we, even people who are like wellness leaders are on prescription drugs for anxiety. Like, it is crazy. And so we know that it's not working. The only other thing, the only thing to do is to do the opposite, which is, okay, well, if I'm looking outside, chasing happiness, trying to find it in the next, you know, thing I buy, what would be an alternative? And so some easy practices we can do, I love the journaling, but ask yourself, well, what do I want for my life? Like, what do I really want? So often we're just scooting along doing what we think we want, but we're not being honest with ourselves. And so honesty is really, really a powerful way forward. And then getting clear your dreams. I have such a passion for dreams and living them, because they are the signature to our fulfillment. So going for your dreams is part of living a fulfilled, joyful life. But guess what? It's not about the dream. Having a number one New York Times bestselling book, super good. But it's not that that makes you fulfilled. It's the journey getting there. It's the creative process. We have to recognize we're already doing the things we really want. We think we have to be something in order to be of value, but we're already valuable. That's the switch.
What's the difference between a dream and a goal, in your opinion?
I think they're the same, but I know a lot of people, I put them in the same bucket. A dream feels more aspirational and exciting and inspirational, but I know a lot of people in the coach world and wellness space will say a goal is an actionable thing you work towards, and a dream is like a fantasy. To me, no, a dream lives in your heart. Bottom line, a goal does live more in your mind because you're taking the steps. Like, a goal is very action, step by step, I'm going to do that. And so think about what a dream is for you, right? Big dream. Here's the thing. We got to go even deeper. And I do this, as you know, in the coaching practice. Okay, so you have a dream. What's even bigger than that? Like, a big dream of mine for so many years was to have a New York Times bestselling book, which is a great dream. But what's even bigger than that? What if a book turns into like a movie? Who would play me? Like, how fun is that? And then I stepped away from those things because those are fun and those become goals. But the real dream, the real aspiration and the success is enjoying every part of it and being at peace with all of the moments, not needing that to make me happy. And that's
right. Because when you hit that and you're having, I don't know, who would play you in your movie? I'm trying to think.
Yeah, I love asking people this and it changes. It depends if people know me really well or people like
I don't know. Well. Who do you think?
Well, I've heard Sandra Bullock many times, but that was more when I was in my 20s. And then I'm definitely in my 30s now. that person from Will and Grace, the crazy
Deborah
neighbor.
Messing? Oh, no, I don't know. I've never watched that show.
That would be great if it was her. That would be great. But no, it was the other one who's really annoying and drinking all the time. And
oh, great. Perfect. So we need to cast someone new. But even if we had the crazy alcoholic neighbor playing you in your movie, like that wouldn't necessarily bring you happiness. I'm speaking from my own experience. I mean, I've had a lot of awesome outside shit happen, but unless I just give myself permission to just be happy and stop being like, you know, okay, great. You have a book. That's amazing. But girl, you got to sell it because then you get a second book and that's what you really want. You really want the second book. So, you know, sell. Like that's not happiness. And that's, again, coming from outside of you.
And that's the thing. We chase these peak moments and we get these peak moments and it's like, okay, cool. Now what's next? And that is what the whole Joy Seeker book is about. And that's what my whole mission is now, is to help us to get out of that rat race, because it is killing us, like emotionally, physically, mentally. We're not present. We're living superficial lives because we're trying so hard to be something we're not. What if we just got rid of all that and just be who we are and enjoy the moment? That is the freedom. That's the life-changing aspect of all of it. And it is about, I think the name of this podcast needs to be Permission to Be Happy, because that is what it is, right?
Absolutely. I mean, abso-frickin-lutely. So you talk about journaling quite a bit. You've just like sprinkled it in. Every time anyone kind of says journaling, I do an inside eye roll. I'm just going to be honest. I like don't get journaling personally. Maybe because I'm a writer and I filter everything. So I'm like, oh, never mind. That was bad verbiage. Like rewind, erase that. So it's never been like a very calming thing for me. But talk to me. I'm a skeptic. Debust it. Why is journaling so awesome, especially for like going inward and more joy and all that?
Yeah, it's interesting because in Joy Seeker, there's whole sections in the book called Joy Seeker Journal Time. But when I was writing it, I didn't even imagine everyone sitting down to write. When I say the word journal, what it really is self-reflection. Just take out the word journal and just say self-reflection time. Because we can journal and literally sit down, but there's some of us that just are, like you said, overcritical about that, or we're thinking, I have to have it perfect, or just, I don't have time to sit down and write. So what it is it's about presenting the questions to you. The key thing that journaling is so magnificent is because it asks us questions that we are really given an opportunity to answer. We can answer them in our mind, in a meditation, or just simply like answering. And that's what I did. I did not journal when I was in my depression, leaving, you know, the grief of Tucker. I asked the questions in a journal format and allowed my mind to answer them. So I'm basically saying, yes, journaling is important, but if it doesn't feel good, then just the most important is you ask yourself the questions and answer them. In whatever way.
Got it.
You can sing them more, if you want.
Ooh, rap them.
Yeah.
Tell them that would be fun. My doggy. Okay. So what you're really just meaning when you say journaling again is just like pausing, stopping scrolling, looking at life outside you and asking yourself how you feel and answering.
Yeah. And it can come in any way. We can close our eyes and listen to our inner voice. We can write it down and journal. I mean, I do love journaling, but as a writer, like I don't do it as much as I talk about it. So it's important though.
Yeah. So what are some simple ways in your book and, you know, in your life that you found to just invite more joy in on a day-to-day basis? I mean, is the goal after you went through your travel journey and you realized that it's not about life outside you? Now I know you have another dog. So how are you? Okay, I just combined two questions.
I love it.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to ask you, so how have you This is a good question, I think. Thinking about on the spot. How have you now with your, what's the new dog's name?
Chance.
Chance. Oh, Chance. How have you made sure that this time around you're not putting your happiness in Chance like you did maybe with Tucker? Like, how have you evolved?
Such a good question. And boom. Here's the thing. Halfway through my traveling the world, I was like, this feels superficial. Like, here I am checking all these things off my bucket list. And yeah, it's great, but I'm alone traveling and I don't feel like I'm really living with meaning. Then I went inward and asked my questions, well, why did you set out on this journey anyway? And I realized it wasn't to live the dream of traveling the world. It was to live a more meaningful, joyful life, which meant for me, I wanted to live with more purpose. And what that meant for me was actually traveling with purpose. So I actually started to volunteer with a rescue organization that rescues dogs from the China meat trade. I was in Southeast Asia and I worked with Golden Bond Rescue to fly dogs back to America. And it wasn't part of my plan. I wasn't saying I'm doing this to adopt a dog, but because I had shifted my focus to be more joyful in the moment and live with purpose by following my values, I love animals so much. And it was kind of a full circle thing where at the end of the year, I ended up adopting Chance. I named him Chance for Second Chance at Life. And we went on this incredible journey together to be together. Like, literally, we flew on the plane from China to America.
Oh my God. How did that even work? Was he like in a little crate?
Yeah, he was. He was in a crate along with 8 other dogs that I rescued for that flight.
What?
Yeah. So the Golden Bond organization works with the Chinese government to rescue them from the meat trade. They buy them and then they get them into quarantine and stuff. So it was a very organized process. It's not just like I went over there and picked them up off the street. Like, it wasn't like that at all. It was very legit. And I was an escort, so I was able to escort the dogs and be the person responsible for them across the world as we flew back. It was amazing.
Oh my God. Were they like peeing everywhere?
It's such a good question because there was 8 dogs and Chance, his crate, it was like a 15-hour flight. He did not go at all in his crate. And a lot of the other ones, they did. They were so
panicked.
You're scared.
Yeah, I pee in my crate.
I know. And it was dark. And so I felt, and so part of the process is we bring them back to America and then we go to a volunteer's home, wash them and stuff. But when Chance didn't, I was like, oh my gosh, he's potty trained. I want the potty trained one. But that wasn't really it. He was just like, I'm not going and I don't want to, you know, it was a thing. Dogs don't like doing that all the time.
Yeah, it's true.
So the point I think is really important is we have to put more of our values into our life. And I wanted more meaning and I wanted more connection and I wanted to help. I wanted to be of service, something bigger than me, which was helping animals. And so to get back to your original question, it is so different now. Like, I love Chance and I love Tucker so much, but before I was needing Tucker for my happiness. And now I can literally, I'm whole and complete. And I come to Chance and he is a beautiful little dog. Well, he's like 80 pounds. He's not that little, but I can be sitting on the couch and petting him and cuddling. And that is just as amazingly joyful as me as I was traveling the world, checking off things off my bucket list, because now I know joy is not outside of me. It isn't. Like, no matter what is happening outside of me, I can choose to have the peace within.
Okay. So how that was perfect. Because as you were talking, I had another question, which is, how do you snap into joy? You know, it's like we talked about, like, snapping out of it. If one finds themselves, you know, putting their happiness or their sadness into circumstances or things outside of them, how can they like snap it on and be like, yo, no, let me go back to joy? Like, how do you, are there tips or tactics?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because in the book I talk about what you do and where you go has nothing to do with our capacity to be in joy. And as soon as we recognize that, we realize that joy is us. It's in us always. And so it becomes a lot easier to return to that joy. Because even now, at the beginning of my journey, I was thinking, oh, joy is outside of me. I need to go seek it and chase it and go after it. But really, it's about allowing. And so once you make that switch, it's a perspective switch. We switch to allowing ourselves. It's kind of like working out. The first time you do it, if you haven't done it in a long time, you might be sore. You might be like, I don't want to go back to the gym. But when you switch your mindset to like, I feel so good, like it becomes a lot easier to do it.
But what about in, like, we were talking earlier about settling and how I've outgrown my apartment. And so it wasn't bringing me joy anymore. And I was just feeling terrible in here. So when you're in a circumstance or a job or a relationship that's really a problem, how do you then say, well, you know, the joy is within me. I can still be joyful even though I'm really not my best self in this apartment anymore or in this job or relationship?
Well, that's when we recognize about the power of being present. And so a lot of times our joy escapes us because we're looking to the next thing that's going to make us happy, or we're thinking about the past. Mm-hmm. And the present moment is one of the best tools that we can have to return to what, even breathing. Like if you're overwhelmed or in an anxious situation, just going inward in the moment right now to breathe, going into the present moment. But when you talk about what you're saying about, I realize that I've outgrown my situation and I'm ready to move forward, we can choose to be grateful for the time that we had in the situation, the learning lessons we got, and that will help us move forward with a lot more ease versus feeling strain and stress and anxious about the choice. Does that make sense? So it's really a switch of focusing on gratitude and being present and saying, you know, this is not my forever state and I'm moving forward. So joy isn't just like singing kumbaya in your mind and jumping on rainbows and unicorns. It's not like that at all. It's a way of life of being appreciative towards yourself and all that is, instead of resisting what is and pushing away.
That, I'm just letting that sink in. That's why I just paused. Yes, that makes a lot of sense. Rather than panicking or getting angry or, yeah, just, I mean, there's a different way to say, okay, I've outgrown my apartment. I want to find a new circumstance or a new job. Or, I mean, when you were traveling, you were like, ooh, this wasn't all it was cut out to be. But it sounds like instead of like freaking out, you were curious and then you just found a better aligned situation.
Yes, that's it. That's it. Curious, the curiosity can pull you forward. And really, the joy is in the journey. And so the joy is in the moment, yes. But if you're working, so you guys are moving, you're going to move into the next chapter of your lives. That in itself is exciting because it represents growth, it's new opportunities, new beginnings. And that in itself can be joyful too.
So you've said before, and you've told me, that what is meant for you won't pass you by. If it comes, let it. If it goes, let it. And kind of going along the lines of trusting and curiosity, how do we really just trust, like surrender and just trust that like things that are meant for us will come and things that aren't won't, you know? Like that is a huge thing that you've taught me, that, you know, sometimes not getting what you thought you wanted is a blessing, and, you know, rejection is protection. Like, how do you get into a state of mind where you just trust if things come, it's great and meant to be? If it doesn't, you know, like a best-selling author, when you have a book come out, like if you don't make it onto Oprah, like how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question, because that's really the core of all of it, is we are wanting to believe and trust in ourselves more, but we just don't know how. And that's what it comes back down to, is the trust and faith that you have in yourself. And of course, when we think about the things that we really want, there's so many layers to it. And a lot of times when we get super, super honest with ourselves, we realize that those things aren't necessarily what we really wanted, but what our ego wanted. And what we really wanted was perhaps more joy, more love, more connection, not more recognition, more acknowledgement, or more accolades, or more money, because all of that is great and wonderful, but it's not the true reason that we're here to fulfill ourselves, right? So we have to look at what it is we're chasing and why it is we think we want the things we want. When you reverse it, you will get to a place where you start to recognize that all is in right order. And when you start to see and live from this place of really a joy in your heart, like you're totally in a different vibration. And what I mean by vibration is you're like vibing in a different alignment with, you no longer are obsessed with that outcome because you're good. You're good.
Wow. So it really just comes back, all of this to just being okay in the moment and like, yes, not looking for shit outside you. And I mean, your book is huge. It's a very long, thick book. But if you were to sum up Joy Seeker, I guess, how would you do that? What do you want people to take away from? What's like the thesis statement?
So yeah, so the Joy Seeker is about being who you're meant to be, and it's about authentic living. But there's really three simple things we can all walk away with the Joy Seeker process. And number one is we learn how to let go of expectations mm-hmm. and be fully in the journey. So that's a big theme, of course, we've talked about. And your life is so much more fulfilling when you do this. Number two, we learn how to trust ourselves in life a lot more, and we live openly from our heart instead of from our ego, fear, mind. And the third one is we start to see our life as an unfolding creative adventure, and everything becomes more exciting and joy-filled.
Oof! Amazing. Those are three terrific thesis statements.
Oh, that's the cliff notes. Yes.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay. I want to ask you my planty questions for your third time.
Okay.
Okay. What is your current favorite plant to eat?
Wow, this is really good. It's interesting. Brussels sprouts.
Very interesting.
Yeah, and it's only because the way that I can't prepare them, but there's this restaurant locally that prepares them so good. They crisp them in a way that they're just, yeah. So I really am loving my vegetables and Brussels sprouts right now.
What is this restaurant?
It's, what's it called? I mean, here in Portland, it's a pizza chain that opened up into like gourmet food. I can't think of the name right now, but it's good. And I'll let you know.
Yeah. Follow up with me on that. We'll let everyone know.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is your favorite thing you do for self-care?
I love bubble baths.
And what a cliche answer.
I know. And I probably said that every time you've asked me that question on this podcast.
Oh my God.
But my bubble baths are actually fancy because I will do like a lot of things in there, like essential oils. Sometimes I'll do rose petals, and I always listen to a meditation. So it's my meditation time.
So like how long are you meditation. In there?
Anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes.
Like, oh, okay. So it's not like a long soak.
No, it's interesting because I've had my coach one time was like, okay, I know you love baths, but you need to like take them longer. You need to like give yourself more time. I'm like, no, I don't have more time. But I just like the hot water. I'm a Pisces. I like water.
I'm with you. I'm actually the most tragic thing about the house we're buying is there's no good bathtub. I am distraught. That is literally the only thing. I mean, it checks every other box except for like nice soaking tub. There's like a little baby bathtub, but like it's not one that an adult gets into. I know.
If you are buying, you could put one in.
I know. But then I'd have to expand the bathroom, and like that's not on our priority list right now. So I know it's tough, but that's buying a house. You know, you win some, you lose some. And that's what I'm losing. Yeah. So it's tragic. Yeah. Anyway, what is a book besides one of your 5 and 6, 7, 8 in the pipeline, ideally? What is another book that's really inspired you in an awesome way?
Ooh, so a book that I actually dedicated Joy Seeker to Summer Bacon, who's one of my mentors, and she has a book called The School called Planet Earth. And it's a big inspiration for the work that I do and also me in finding my purpose and passion.
Cool. It's called The School called Planet Earth.
Yeah, actually, I think it's that. A School called Planet Earth, but it's by Summer Bacon. And it was really fascinating for me to just kind of discover that we're kind of always learning and growing.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, you represent that. Like that, you know, every book you've written is so memoir-y and filled with your own stories, and you're always growing. I mean, just when you thought you had it figured out and then you lost Tucker, you were like, oh, I don't have it figured out.
It's so true. And it's a beautiful process to keep growing and keep sharing. That's
as long as you enjoy the journey.
Yes, there we are.
So you're really big on mantras. What is your current mantra?
Ooh, I like that. So I do like mantras a lot. And
are you just stalling?
Well, a little bit, because I'm thinking of the best one. So the one that I actually really, really love is this is not your practice life. And that's actually a theme throughout Joy Seeker. Like, we have to go for it. Time is ticking. Think about people on their deathbed who are regretting their life. Like, we don't know what's promised to us. So this is not your practice life has been a big theme for my past year of living.
Wow. That is, wow. That's a different one. I was thinking it was like, right? I am strong.
I am joy.
I am joy. Yeah. I am
stardust. No, it's like, it kind of lights the fire because after Tucker died, I was like, holy crap. There are a lot of things in my life that like I want to be and do and see, and I'm not doing it. And so this is not your practice life, lady. Get going.
Damn. That's kind of like tough love. It's like a tough love mantra. Yeah. Tough self-love.
Yeah, there we are. Yeah.
All right. Well, where can everyone stay connected to you and get your book when it's out and just Shannon Kaiser it up?
Yeah, it's shannonkaiser.com or playwiththeworld.com. Same. So playwiththeworld.com on Instagram and Facebook. It's Shannon Kaiser Writes. Joy Seeker is available October 29th at all bookstores, all across everywhere, and Amazon, of course. I would love to hear from you guys if you grab a copy. I love hearing from people about their joy journeys.
So what is one thing that somebody listening right now could do in the next hour to just shift into a more joyful perspective?
I think the very first thing we can do is just go to thankful appreciation, gratitude. Whatever it is you're doing, turn your attention to appreciation for it.
That's great. And
simply just, just focus on something you do appreciate in your life. That in itself is enough.
Yeah. And that just brings you instantly shifts you from anxiety or worry or fear or anger or disappointment. It just brings you right into joy, I suppose. How can you not really feel joy when you're feeling grateful for something?
It's true. I think it's Tony Robbins who said you can't be in anger and joy at the same time. You just can't.
That's true.
And so if we're focusing on trying to feel better and we're feeling angry, frustrated, stressed out in life, the very first thing we can do is just say, okay, well, I can't control that, but what can I control? I control maybe my appreciation level. I'll appreciate something. And it's a beautiful part.
And yeah. I think something that Abraham Hicks, I think, I get a little confused about that situation, but the Hicks say all you really need is like 17, I think, seconds in joy to like really shift your whole physiology.
Exactly it.
Is that?
Yeah. Correct? Yeah, that's a beautiful one. And I know that it's so cool because the whole process there is if you just hold yourself into a place of appreciation for 10, 15, 17 seconds. 17 seconds is the magic point. And there's new research actually that's even Abraham and Esther Hicks were talking. It's now 12 seconds.
Just where the hell are they researching this? And what happens? Sorry. What happens after 12 seconds?
I follow their work and they're very much some of my teachers. And so it's nice to like kind of I listened to their podcast, stuff like that. And there was a recent one that came out maybe earlier this year. And they talked about new research in like, all you have to do is 12 seconds. And I was like, yeah, that's less seconds, you know, but what it is it's a scientific approach to the way our brain works and the way the physiology of our body, a thought grabs onto a thought. So if you're thinking a negative thought, like I hate my job, I hate my life, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm so stuck, that perpetuates. But if you quickly catch yourself and say, well, right now I'm thankful I have a job because it's paying the bills. And even though I don't know what I want, it's like you kind of climb your way and catch yourself. And if you can hold that vibration of good feeling thoughts for now 12 seconds or 17 seconds, you start to catch better thoughts after that. So you're no longer in this place of feeling off track or behind.
So it's like spiraling, but in a great way. It's like spiraling your way up.
Joy. It's really what it is. All of it. Yeah.
Boom. Yeah. Period.
Joy
to the world. God. Thank you, Shannon, so much. This was very enjoyable.
It was wonderful. I'm so glad I got to be here. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. I hope you're feeling a wee bit more joyful than you were when you pressed play. For me, this episode is dropping the day that we move into our new house and start shifting into a new life that we designed around the sole guideline, really, of joy. You can hear my whole story about this in episode 157. But as Shannon said here in this chat, we are all made to be our true self and to be in alignment with our soul or our heart. And that is the loving nudging that helped give me the courage to troubleshoot my way out of a living sitch that did not light me up and create an incredibly unconventional life that fits mine and Jesse's and Tommy's souls like a glove. I firmly firmly believe that it's the regular wellness practices I have in place, eating all the plants and doing all the stuff discussed in the previous 165 episodes of the show, that builds us into beings capable and confident enough to boldly lead with joy rather than with others' expectations or the social norms. Being bold and brave does take great physical energy and mental stamina. And I cannot discredit the plant partying from the going after your dreams way of life. I also can't discredit Four Sigmatic shrooms from bringing joy into my mouth and system daily, as well as Comrade's compression socks for wrapping my often really sore feet in joyful hugs on the regular. Feel free to mosey on over to the show notes at partyinmyplants.com/166 to learn more about these joyful friends of mine and to explore even more ways to party in your plants. Bye-bye for now.